This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 208 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. You may want to grab a cup of tea and some damn scones for this episode, folks. One guy talking, my name is Wayne.
My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast for Countdown Movies. Very occasionally, sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And as Wayne has so brilliantly alluded.
Subtle as hell, son.
Today is the top 10 British films.
British films.
We've gone geographical for the first time. We're going to do a series of these over the course of the next year or so. And we wanted to start with a very important area of the world, shall we say.
Should we have made it UK films?
Let's get to that. We'll get to that in terms of the defining of what is British and if whether or not you messed up, because hopefully you did check. Some of our listeners did fact check us about what is British and what isn't.
I read that thread.
Good, then you're safe.
Okay.
Yes, you will be safe. Anyway, it's going to be a great show. There's going to be a lot of amazing films we're going to discuss, and it's a huge pool.
It is a huge pool, but it's... We'll talk.
We absolutely will. All right. Now, a little bit of cleanup, first of all, from last week's show. Those listening to the top 10 intense films will have heard me try to make some joke about intense and fail dismally at the start of the episode.
Okay.
Teach Me Something podcast fixed the problem for us.
I see.
And said, will there be a lot of camping in tents in these movies?
I see what's going on here.
Intense.
Yeah, I mean,
I could have gone with that one. That's better than what I came up with, which was fuck all.
I can't remember what you came up with, but it must have been pretty bad if that was the good one.
Thank you to for them for that. And then also from the Captain Marvel review, which
yes.
So the review we stretch off or split off into a different show each week from Monty Brantley. Spoilerish comment, so just be aware. Skip forward 30 seconds if you're not at all interested in any. It's not that bad, I have to be honest. Samuel L. Jackson is not Nick Fury and didn't lose his eye in World War II. In the comic and MCU, he is actually Nick Fury Jr., the son of the original Nick Fury. I was so hoping for the line, what does your father call you, Jr.? I am hoping MCU brings back his dad.
Wait. So the Nick Fury that we see is not just a black version of the comic white Nick Fury. It is, in fact, that Nick Fury's son.
That is what Monty
and they both
is
happened to have
suggesting.
They both lost their eye?
Yeah,
is that what's going on here?
I'm just reporting what the listeners say.
Okay, that is news to me, Mont.
So thank you. If that's true,
yeah. Interesting.
He did actually send me a link to a Wikipedia page, which does show that. So
does that mean comic book Nick Fury's wife was African American? Is that what that means?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
It's confusing.
Uh-huh.
Don't take me down the path. One other thing which Rick Peterson, long-time listener to the show, pointed out was on our review of Captain Marvel, and I want to keep this really brief. We did talk about me pointing out why Captain Marvel is as prominently powerful as Thor, if not the most, an Omega level.
Yeah, hero. We had a thing about
and,
that.
We forgot to mention it.
Did we?
This is Mickey Mouse podcast.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
So I'm going to do, again, 30 seconds only, very quick.
Why is Captain Marvel the most powerful?
Or as powerful, at least, if not more so than Thor. Because, here we go, spoilers. She flies through the middle of a fucking ship and destroys this Star Destroyer.
Look.
That's powerful, motherfucker.
She can fly
through the ship.
Look, it's not bad, but Thor took a sun to the chest.
It's not.
He took a sun to the chest. It's no, a planet, bitch.
He took a beam of sunlight.
Bitch, it's a sun cracker. It was dead, and then they woke it up, and then he fucking fucked it with his chest. That was.
I have a soundboard answer. If you're new to the show, here is the soundboard answer. Soundboard being, of course, the recordings that we drop into the show. Here it is.
All of your arguments are like my asshole, man. I'm glad you took the time to introduce that one.
Just the new listeners, I've realized that it's been a while since we've acknowledged their
presence. Hey guys, how you doing?
Great to have you on board. Anyway, there you go. So that's the point. I feel like that's why she can ride with surpass Thor.
She can fly. That's it. She's still not tougher than Thor.
I can fly. I can't fly through a fucking Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
I think you're missing the point here.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I reckon if those two faced off, Thor would be like,
whatever.
Yeah.
I reckon Captain Marvel's the one that picks up Thor's hammer at some point. Anyway, just say it.
Please, she's a woman. She's evil.
Oh!
She wasn't. If fucking Captain America wasn't worthy, she ain't. Come on now. And I'm sure she did some bad thing before she was like,
that's terrible.
Captain
America. That's terrible.
It's fine, motherfucker. It's fine, motherfucker.
I might have to edit that shit out.
Suck a dick. Just keep it in, okay? It's fine. I'm telling you, everyone's fine with
that's
it.
Enough. That's enough. That's enough. All right, moving on now to our plug for the week for the Podcast Republic app, the app of choice for the Countdown movie and TV reviews podcast.
If they're on Android.
If they're on Android, that is correct. For your Android device, a robust and good app.
I like it better when you say it.
App that you can check out this and any other show on. So please check out the Podcast Republic app.
Press buttons.
Dynamite drop-in money at broadcast school has really paid off.
That's known as a call to action, Paul, which every advertisement must end with.
Okay.
Okay.
Press buttons.
Yeah, that's what they'll have to do.
All right. Well, that is the end of the preamble for the show, except for one very important thing I almost forgot. The results from last week's top 10 intents.
I take it I got finger banged.
Very close.
Oh.
Very close. 46 votes recorded.
Fuck.
21 to you, 25 to me.
Oh, just slightly.
Very close. Well done, sir. So it gives me the overall lead, 4-3 in what has definitely been the closest year thus far in terms of the results. Same results or vote will be up today in the Facebook listener community. Link is in the show notes. If you're not there yet, head on over there. It's the only place you can vote for who wins each week in terms of their lists.
Totally.
All right. Let's get into it then. The top 10 British films, and I'm not going to do any accents, I promise.
Are you sure?
So you have to promise. The very best of British films.
British film
is today's topic of the countdown, and I guess we should define, because I am a dumbass.
No, I'm a dumbass.
What was British films? And I want to thank both Christopher Toffer from the Master Debaters podcast. They're back. Check out their first episode, which does feature us, and David Powell, who put it down in a very succinct little message for us. David Powell, great friend and patron to the show. Great Britain equals England, Scotland, and Wales. UK equals Britain, i.e. all of the above, and Northern Ireland. Neither includes the Republic of Ireland, which is its own nation. So, we probably did ourselves a real favour by just going...
I didn't fucking know that.
British. So I'm saying, dumbass, didn't know.
I have no idea.
So, that is what we're restricting ourselves to. British, sorry, English, Scottish, and Welsh films.
Right, because there's a shit ton of Welsh films.
Spoilers, there are no Welsh films
on
my list.
Oh, there are, but no one can understand what anyone was saying, so... I don't know why I'm shitting on everyone.
Shout out to all our Welsh listeners.
That's right, man. I love y'all.
Speaking of shout outs, if I can just jump in here.
Yeah, go on.
Hello, Turkmenistan.
What?
Where we were very briefly the number 2 TV and movie podcast.
Because there's two cunts with an iPhone there?
Yeah. Because I'm pretty sure, basically, that there was 4 downloads that week.
Where's Turkmenistan? Do you know where that is?
Middle East.
Okay.
He said, hopefully, confidently.
No, because in my head, of course it's in Turkey, right? But who knows? I know nothing. Sorry. Anyway, everyone's going to fact check me now. So
that will be a future top 10 list of the show. Top 10 Turkmenistanish. All right, that's it. We were sliding down anyway, so they stopped listening to us.
It's spiraling out of control.
All right, well, why don't I lead off? It's pretty straightforward, the parameters.
Yeah, you go ahead.
I have to be honest, though. There's not a lot of classic films on my list. And I had to be honest, there's a temptation when we compete against each other and we see the listener feedback. By the way, heaps of listener feedback. Thanks so much to everyone
for
coming in with their choices for this week's Pop 10, which we'll get to at the end of the episode. But I had to be authentic to myself. And so I have one old film on my list and the rest are all fairly contemporary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, me too, because I don't really know shit about old films.
Yeah, so when we say our top 10 British films, they are our top 10 right. British films. We don't want to suggest that these are the best British films. We're not making that argument today.
Yeah.
We very rarely do make that argument. They are our...
Not successful.
Ours.
By the way, I'm so old that some of the contemporary choices I made are in fact classics.
Yeah, arguably. Do you know what I mean? If you're listening to this and you're 18, 19 years old and you're like, that film was older than dirt.
My dad and mom fucked that film.
Yeah, but if you are one of our older listeners, or our age or older, you'll be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. All right, you're number 10.
My number 10 then is a Danny Boyle film.
Wow.
And
so is mine.
Ooh, is it the same one? It's from 2007. It's a fantastic sci-fi thriller slash sort of pseudo horror film. It's called Sunshine.
Ah, I wondered if you'd have this on here. No, mine is not that one.
No. All
but
right.
Tell me about Sunshine.
Sunshine stars Cillian Murphy, Rose Byrne, Chris Evans. among others, and is a great film about a group of astronauts slash cosmonauts who are sent up to effectively reignite the sun. Mm. It's written by Alex Garland, who, of course, is a bit of a darling these days after Ex Machina and Annihilation.
Yeah, he is popular now, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And it's a fan. I find this film visually fantastic.
This is possibly one of the most, definitely one of the most beautiful women movies. Movies I've ever seen.
Yes, I 100% agree. And some people have problems with the tonal shift in the film. I am not one of those people.
I did have a problem with the tonal shift. But
that not, kept it off your list.
Not necessarily a tonal... You know what? It's not that I had a problem with it. I was just, oh, look at this. And then you know how I feel about horror. Because that's what it turns into.
Yeah, effectively the third act is kind of a horror film.
Yeah, but like, you know what? I forgive it completely because it's so pretty to look at.
And I think it's a really taut and tight 107 minutes. And I adore this film. I wish they would release a 4K version of it, so I may.
Oh, haven't they? That's
I don't
amazing.
Think so.
It's
if
beautiful.
They have, I certainly haven't released it here in Australia. So, but it's something. One of those films I should go and search out the rest of the world.
It didn't do so well, did it?
No, it wasn't a huge hit. It was a bit of a critical darling. Most critics enjoyed it, although some did point to the third act shift. But I love the shit out of this movie and recommend it to anyone who is at all interested in that kind of thing.
Sunshine. All right, nice one. Well, here's my Danny Boyle film. It is Shallow Grave.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. And it's not on my honorable mentions, but only because I forgot about it. It should be on my honorable mentions.
Funnily enough, I only saw this movie because Paul, you didn't even recommend it to me. You said something about it that interested me, and I couldn't remember what it was. Okay. Obviously, this is Danny Boyle's, I guess, first film, or very near first film.
It was his first film from memory.
So I didn't know who Danny Boyle was. So it's about Ewan McGregor, well, David, Juliet, and Alex, and there's these three Edinburghians hunting for a fourth flatmate, and they are all complete assholes. They're not very nice people. They bait people into applying and then abuse them for their own amusement. They're just kind of dickheads. It's sort of played like for laughs, right? But it's still like...
It's a black comedy, I think. It's
definitely a very black comedy. They eventually settle on this guy named Hugo, and that turns out to be a bad call because the next day he turns up dead in the bedroom with a suitcase full of cash under the bed. All three of them freak out. They decide to mutilate the guy's body, bury it in the forest.
And as you do.
As you do. And then they pocket the cash. But from this point, shit becomes creepier and weirder as like they start to turn on each other. And basically, it's despite the usual like thriller cliches, there's a few he's behind you moments and that stuff, which is fine. I think it achieves this like cut above the wrist kind of status because I didn't know what this movie was when I showed it to you. And then it turned out to be quite dark. And I find that I didn't like any of the characters, but I liked what happened in the movie. And and never having heard of this director before, I'm like, this is better than your usual one of those things. It's probably because it was British that it was so...
Well, that's what we're celebrating.
Yeah, it was, but because it was so, you know, in that... Well, let's face it, the sort of underlit kind of like... Stark palette kind of, I don't know, not Stark palette, but it's British looking. And that's what threw me off. So I really dug this movie.
British looking. What's British looking?
British looking is this.
Grey?
Okay? Yes.
Grayer?
It's grayer.
More dour?
Certainly the tone is away from bright, certainly, but the pitch of the movie as well. And the, I would say the grain of the film almost, because it's, the British movies to me
Shallow Grave
seem
would have been
more
shot on film.
Yeah, exactly. So grainy like that. I know they have that digitally, but yeah, I think it's just... I remember thinking, I'm going to remember this director now just because of this. And it turns out he's the shit as well.
But you watch this after you watch some other Danny Boyle films, right? Not to mention them, because they may yet come up.
Yes, you're right. You're right. But we won't talk about that. But yeah, absolutely.
I will go on record now and say that Danny Boyle is the most represented director on my list.
I'm really embarrassed about the amount of very few, almost like directors that are like all together on the list. Like there's a lot of their own movies.
Yeah.
Okay. Twice.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We'll
see.
We'll see
what lands where my number nine may incite some wrath from you.
The hell you say?
My number nine is a film we recently rewatched for the patrons.
Oh, don't say this.
It's 2006's Casino Royale.
Oh, my God.
Directed by Martin Campbell. Let's look at Wayne's reaction.
Low, cunt. Why is it so low?
Very good film. Enjoyed it.
The best film ever. Anyway.
You could be more wrong if your fanny was screwed on backwards.
It is. All right, tell us why this the world's best movie is only number motherfucker.
What? No.
Shit.
The world's best movie, he says.
But kinda. It's definitely in the running.
I did not expect this to be where it is clearly on your list.
What the fuck, man? All right, well, please, do go on.
Kiss It Everywhere Else is a fantastic reboot of what was a very flagging and sad James Bond franchise.
Did you ever see the original?
No.
David Niven. Yeah, it's fucking hilarious. Yeah.
No, clearly this is the one. I haven't seen it. I won't.
It's like Rat Pack.
I will write nothing off. In a year where I'm trying to watch as many films as I am, and I've watched some shit I would not have touched with a 10-foot fucking pole so far this year. Shout out to Daniel from the IMDb Journey podcast. We'll get a score check next week for who's where, because I am catching up. This film is a light at the end of what had become a very dark tunnel. Mm. It's incredibly well put together. Martin Campbell returning from Goldeneye, if I'm not mistaken.
It was him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think ups his game significantly. Completely. Not the Goldeneye's a bad film, it's a very good film. This is a much better iteration for me because it's a more grounded, realistic take on it. It's David Craig.
Anyway, Daniel Craig fills me in.
Daniel Craig is a fantastic sort of left field choice to James Bond. Has owned the role ever since, so much so that they continually back up trucks of money to his door.
And so they dump should. It He's his doorstep fucking awesome.
So that he will come back and do one more. And the output of the four films he's been in so far has been variable, but this is without doubt the best. It's a fantastic film. You want to hear all about it, become a patron, listen to our review.
Yeah, you should check out that review if you're interested because
we really go into detail about it. But this... Yeah, great bad guy, Mads Mikkelsen, as well. Some
I didn't
incredible
know who he was at the time, but yes,
action scenes, I have to say.
Dude, including the whole thing was the parkour. Class, man. It was whole that great. Parkour scene took fucking like 6 weeks.
One of the most extravagant car chase accidents in film history as well.
Yeah, so they trashed three of those 300K Aston Martins. And had to install some fucking thing on the passenger side to blow it over.
And at the end, does not end the way a standard James Bond film does.
Would agree.
So, yeah, that's my pick for number 9. Do you want to say anything more about it now, Wayne, or do you want to wait till later and espouse its virtues?
I'll just drop some facts later on. Okay. So, yeah. All right, cool.
Sounds fine to me. All right, your 9, sir.
My number 9. Although I love this film and maintain it's technically British, great British comedy.
Or technically? Or it is?
It is, but like if you... Well, look, what I'm saying is I will admit this one is purely nostalgia, all right? It's 4 weddings and a funeral. Oh my God, I love the movie. Fuck you, Paul. I'm sure Deanna...
Inconceivable!
I'm sure Deanna actually also picked this, so it's not
Deanna
unheard of.
Deanna from the Twisted Philly podcast.
Twisted Philly podcast.
Just announced their 100th episode.
God damn, congratulations,
just
girl.
Just had their 100th episode. Congratulations, Deanna Murray.
Nice one. Yes, this movie, so it's that you're a Hugh Grant foppish fellow and all of his friends and stuff like that, but it came around the time that you and me, all our friends were getting married. Remember that shit?
Did it?
Yeah, it came around the time.
What year was this shit?
It was like after Bill and Joe, and then like the other, and then like it was in the air. And I remember that was this like magical fucking wedding where we went there. And
what wait, song was in this?
It's I feel it in my fingers. What's it called? Love is all around.
I feel it up my ass.
Yeah, that one, right? Which I love.
We might
love.
Have a new music conclusion to this. Yeah,
I'm not gonna rule it out.
You're mocking me, aren't you?
No, I'm serious. All right, but yes, because of, I think, purely how the movie felt, with all the friends getting married and then this happening and all sorts of bad, well, whatever, good and bad shit happening, I just adore the shit out of it. And every time I look at it now, I kind of remember being young.
Do you not look at it and think Hugh Grant, tranny hooker?
Nah, everyone fucks a tranny hooker every now and then.
What the hell? No!
I should clarify, I have not.
But, sure, good backtrack.
Oh, please, this is nothing. Hugh Grant, man, that's nothing. Have you seen the scandals happening now? Forget about it.
Andy McDowell, like, I don't know.
Andy McDowell, I was never necessarily a fan of that coquettish bullshit smile shit. I want to, like, come on, bitch, please. All right. But I do know that everything else about it was fantastic. I actually loved Hugh Grant in this movie, and I loved his work in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., One Guy Talking. So,
you should watch Paddington 2.
What, Paddington 2? Yeah, I only saw Paddington 1. Paddington 2, is it? Is Hugh Grant?
He's the villain.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Return to form.
Wow. And you know what? I love his fucking...
Well done, fabulous. That would be a word that Hugh Grant would use.
Yes. Dreary. Foppish and British. He made it cool.
Whilst I said that, my hair flopped over my eyes in an annoying manner.
He is the Cowlick King. And FYI, everyone, Paul used to be too.
And now he doesn't have enough hair to have
a cow. I'm the one with not enough hair for anything. So.
All right. That's,
anyway, yeah.
I think that'll earn you a lot of votes.
I don't know. I think everyone's going to think I'm a bitch, but then again, that's true.
I personally think you're a bitch.
Of course you do.
But
Because it's the truth.
My number 8 is the oldest film on my list. I'm very, very pleased to have it here. It is the funniest film on the list, without a doubt. It is a Monty Python film. My favorite Monty Python film. It's Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Now, you like... I did not know your position on Monty Python. The Holy Grail. Yeah, that's got to be the best of them.
I think so.
What were your views on... it's obviously it's better than Life of Brian, or is that right behind it?
I like Life of Brian just fine, but I think this one is a better film. Maybe because I'm more into swords and knights.
Absolutely.
And
no, let's face it. It's more interesting than, you know, Babylon, Jesus, whatever. So, okay, not bad. Yeah, the funny weird thing that I actually like about this film is when the fucking knights are like clop, 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 right? And they're jumping around and stuff, right?
I love the way that it is Monty Python, so it is absurd. And it is the most absurd version of the King Arthur legend that you could possibly imagine.
That's totally fine, but this attention to detail I really appreciated. When they all rear up on a castle or something and the four knights are pretending to be on horses, when they stop, they don't just stop, they fucking like totter around like a horse by I'm like, that's just great.
And when they take the French castle, and of course they are hit with a wall of very hurtful abuse.
Fart in your general direction.
Is this why you put it on the fucking list, you asshole?
For this day, I put this sound drop in, I don't know, 6 months ago. For this day, yes.
But you might have put this movie on just so you could use the sound.
You are quite correct. It's worth it twice.
Oh God, all right, fine.
Look, very, very funny. You know, loft is so many quotable moments in
the
film.
It's the sword fight with the sword fight. Arm. That's got to be it.
What do you mean? It's just a flesh wound.
The crown jewel, exactly.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant film. Very, very funny. Yes, it's of a different time, a different era. And if you've never seen it before, I'm not sure you'd appreciate the way that perhaps I have. And,
I'm trying to remember what offensive things could be like mistaken now. You know?
I don't mean it that way. I just mean it like the humor is so weird now.
I'll be honest with you, right? I never really got the Monty Python thing.
I would say the films are exponentially better than the TV show.
That's probably what I'm saying. The TV show, that Flying Circus?
Yeah.
I swear to God, once every 8 episodes you'll laugh or some shit. Once every, you know, it's just, when it's gold, but mostly it's fucking shit. So, you know, one guy talking, I'm sure I'll get some heat about that.
Vote for Paul this week. That's my 8.
All right. My 8 is Kingsman, The Secret Service. Yeah. You know why?
Honorable mention.
Because it's a near-perfect movie. All right? The only bad thing about this movie is Sam Jackson's lisp. That's it.
It's a co-production with the US, but I'm okay with it. I think it fits the brief because it is very, very British.
It's about British. You know,
I'm okay with it, technically speaking. And that's the way. That's why I ended up putting it off my list, just for that small reason.
I understand.
But I have no problem with it being on the list.
Okay, fine. Well, I will actually tell you that this movie, apart from being a good-ass action and a movie that basically achieves everything it sets out to do, and I found that the movie actually gave you kind of, or for me anyway, it gave me sort of valuable kind of life lessons. Because like freaking like Harry Hart is doing the whole thing. There's nothing more noble than being superior to your fellow man. True nobility is being like superior to your inner self.
Okay.
Shit like that in a movie like this is, for me, I don't know, makes it more valid.
Nothing to do at all then with a good suit.
Oh, God. That was great. Although, I don't really like the British cut.
Ooh.
No, it's cool.
Like the British cut on a top 10 British films episode. Vote for Paul.
No. Side vents are nice now, but anyway, long story short. All right, so fuck it. There you are. This movie is like if like James Bond and Quentin Tarantino had a baby. That's what this movie is. It's foul and gross enough, and yet it's still kind of cool. See? So, that's what I say.
Yeah, okay. Babies can be foul and gross and kind of cool. That's fair.
I don't know about cool, but okay, yeah. So,
all right. My number 7 is likely to upset one of our listeners. From the favorite film of Duty from Shaken Not Nerd and Noob, Hot Fuzz.
Oh, I've got it higher.
Oh, there you go. You will score Duty's vote this week. Directed by Edgar Wright. It is my second favorite in the Cornetto trilogy. Of course it is.
Of course it is.
So obviously Nicholas... Simon Pegg. Too many beers. Simon Pegg and Nicholas Frost together for the second time, pulling off a brilliant parody. Is parody too strong a word? No, homage to.
I would say homage.
80s and 90s action flicks, whilst being hilariously funny, occasionally violent, and very, very self-aware. This film is utterly brilliant.
This film is utterly rewatchable too.
Absolutely.
I've seen it so many times, and each time it's one of those where you never stop it. You know, he's like, oh, this is coming on. Boom, watch the whole thing.
Fantastic film with a good little twist, good little mystery in there as well, and a whole bunch of known British actors. The other thing is, how many people they got for this film is incredible, including Academy Award winner Olivia Colman in a very small part.
Which one is she?
She is the one who's constantly making jokes about sex in the police force.
Oh, her. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's big now, isn't she?
Yep.
Yeah. And then
she's as big as you can be. She has the ultimate accolade in the best actress.
Oh, wow.
Category.
Yep. That's a bit huge. Plus, they got James Bond in there.
Patty Considine.
Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton, of course. Timothy Spall.
Yeah.
Rafe Spall? Whichever one, the younger one.
I think it's Rafe.
Rafe Spall. Timothy Spall's son. Yes.
Ah, yeah. Okay. No, he's cool. That's funny shit. Also,
Jim Broadbent.
Classic shit.
Such a good cast as well.
But more than that, I think the reason this movie is good, apart from all the good comedy in this and that, is that it paces so well. I remember watching the movie once, and then I kind of like, I disengaged from the screen or just walked off for about what I thought was 5 minutes. And I came back, and an entirely new part of the movie had started. So I'm like, shit, this is really a snappy movie. It passes along really quickly well.
It does. So, it's so... These two films, and I guess you and I would agree that The World's End does not hold up these two.
That one fucked up.
It's one of the most disappointing films of all time. But the cleverness of this script, Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg absolutely nail it.
Yep. And they directly reference freaking Point Break and shit like that. And then they just go and
have you ever roll onto your back and fire two cans into the air? I mean, that's not quite word for word. But
the best one was the... you know, like have you ever cooked any fools?
Yes.
Have you cooked any fools? That's Bad Boys 1, straight up.
Even Edward Woodward, Bill Bailey.
Oh, that's right. Edward Woodward.
Stuart Wilson.
The equalizer was on
there. The bad guy from Lethal Weapon 3 is in this film. That's right.
Is he a Brit?
I don't know whether he is or isn't. Yeah. He plays one here.
Very good. Very good.
That's my 7, and I understand. It's okay if it's higher on your list.
Yeah, it's totally going to be higher.
All right, cool.
All right, my number 7 is a little bit of a surprise, people.
Uh-oh. Soundboard ready.
Yeah. I saw this movie when I was a young man. It's The Killing Fields.
Ooh.
Yeah. So
is that British?
Yeah, the British production. I checked it out. It feels like it's not.
Back Cambodia, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
It feels like it's not because Sam Waterston's in it, but it is actually a British movie.
Okay. Yeah. I believe you. I'm not checking it right now. Mm.
No, you can.
I promise I'm not.
Feel free. But it is an odd one. So like I said, I saw it when I was a kid, and it was probably the movie that showed me that the world is potentially ugly, because this movie is about this Cambodian fixer guy. His name is Dith Pran, and his patron, this New York Times journalist who is played by Sam Waterston. And the first few scenes show them like traveling to this town in Vietnam, which the Americans accidentally bombed in 1973. And it's just really putrid. At some stage in the movie, they're trying to get this guy out. And the movie makes such a good point of this Cambodian guy has helped everyone so much. He deserves to leave the place and go to safety. And then they try and forge his passport, but it fucks up because the picture goes black and they have to leave him behind. And I remember kind of really like, because it was such this heartbreaking, okay, we have to leave you behind thing. It fucking killed you. So I actually, it's a big, huge thing. It even affects me now, actually, just thinking about it. So
this is an emotional one.
Definitely. And it's an odd thing that for some reason, I've never forgotten that scene. So The Killing Fields is pretty harsh, and it won Oscars and shit at the time, but it's something that you don't hear about it much. So, yeah.
Yeah, mid-80s, right? 84?
84, yeah. So, yeah.
Where did I pull that from?
Well done, old man. Nice one.
Okay, no need for the soundboard there.
It's a little down. Sorry about that, guys. But that's all right.
It's a different choice, and yeah, can't knock it. All right, well, looking at my list, we've got two the same, and here's one of them. My number 6 is Guy Ritchie's Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking
Barrels. That's my number 6 too!
There you go. Okay, all cool. Right. We can talk about it in absolute synchronicity. This film kind of, it did come from nowhere. Right, obviously,
totally
it introduces the world to Jason Statham.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, though, who is the lead of
Nick
the
Moran.
Film, Nick Moran, disappeared off the face of the earth.
Never to be heard from again.
Virtually. I think he's been in a couple of really small British films.
What a shame. He's the lead. Yet everyone else kicks off and he doesn't?
Yeah. I mean, Dexter Fletcher.
I mean, he'd had quite a career before. He was in like the Rachel Papers and shit like that. But
And Jason Fleming, they've both gone on to lots of stuff.
Yeah.
But obviously no one bigger than Jason Statham.
I think Jason Fleming was actually in, what's that movie that I love that everyone hates?
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen,
that's right.
Playing the version of Hyde.
Hyde, that's right. Yeah. But he still, he kicked along. Nick Moran didn't do that. Very weird.
That is a strange part. Obviously Wayne, I'm surprised this is low for Wayne because it's got Sting in it, which automatically gives it an injection of Wayne cum.
A little bit.
I would have thought 5 on any list.
Now that Sting's playing the fucking lute in concert, I don't like him as much. It's fucking shit. You should hear this stuff. Woo. Go ahead, look it up. All right.
So it's probably you?
Not bad. A little bit of a police Sting reference. Oh, Sting actually reference there. Well done, Paul.
Deep cut for all the Sting fans listening to the show.
Go ahead and drop.
All three of you.
Go ahead and drop in the song if you want. Oh, shit.
I had to say it.
Oh my god, it's like Sting's in the room with my asshole.
Anyway, back to the film.
Back to the film. I got a story about this film.
Go on.
All right. There's a T to the C story attached to this movie. Did you know that? Tom Cruise saved this film.
How?
Oh, let me tell you how. Okay. This movie was obviously great when it was made, but a lot of the distributors had their doubts about whether it would play on the market because it was a very specific kind of movie.
British.
Yeah, very British. Yeah. So, as it was about to be shown at a special screening in America, Matthew Vaughn asked Trudy Styler, incidentally, Sting's wife, who was a producer on the film, to see if she can get in touch with her pal Tom Cruise and see if he'd come along to the American buyer screening, and he did. So according to like Matthew Vaughn, he says it was hysterical. You had all these mid-level executives sitting there, and Cruise walks in. They all sit up and pay attention. They all start getting on their phones, and all of a sudden the senior exec started turning up. Yeah. And then,
Just
from him turning up. So all of a sudden, it's like, why is he here, right? At the end of the movie, Tom Cruise gets up in front of everyone and says, this is the best movie I've seen in years. You guys would be fools not to buy it, all right?
And he wouldn't have done that just...
to be friends or whatever. But it was the shit, right? So after good that, film. Right after that, bidding war. Yeah, bidding war in the film. Later, it becomes an international hit. So it
launches Guy Ritchie's career, launches Matthew Vaughn's career, launches Jason Statham's career.
Pretty much everyone except Nick Moran's, yeah. So. So, once again, Tom Cruise is the shit. I don't give a fuck what you'll think.
If you hate Tom Cruise, vote for Paul.
Yes. And one more little thing. It got a new ending after those test screenings. It was ambiguous. They just kind of walked off. The four guys just kind of walked off. You didn't quite know what was going to happen with them. And then apparently Guy Ritchie wrote the new ending on like a back of a cigarette packet or something, and they just came up with that, with a gun under the bridge
thing. It's not a downer, but my... the thing that bugs me about this film is just what happened to Guy Ritchie's talent.
Hang on a second. Hang on a fucking second.
I have the answer, by the way, but
no,
go on.
No, fuck you. Because, look, Guy Ritchie goes and does this and another movie, which I'm sure will turn up. All right?
Don't worry, talking.
Oh, okay, yeah. And I know he's had some very wild missteps. That shitty Revolver one with Jason Statham. God. That I don't even know what he was doing. He was on crack, all right?
King Arthur
was... all right.
Fucking shit.
Like, it was kind of shitty, all right? But it was... there's not a patch on that fucking Revolver thing.
Swept Away?
I never saw Swept Away, but I imagine it was a turd. This is a guy who dances left and right. This guy is like... he's like, oh, really good one, then just really bad one. And then maybe one that's okay. And then
Are you Ridley Scott?
Oh, good point. Yeah. Mm. Well, guess what? Fucking The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which I can mention, it's not on my list because it's technically an American production.
And also not good enough to make
it. It was fucking beautiful. That movie was fucking fantastic. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is nothing like a Guy Ritchie movie. And it's all the better for it. It's beautiful and has a ton of heart. Everyone go watch it. All right. So anyway.
If you want to be bored.
Oh, eat my balls. That is a beautiful fucking movie. And Henry Cavill is fucking the shit in it. He's Archer. Anyway, long story short. So I forgot what I was saying. Anyway, Guy Ritchie isn't that bad. That's what I was going to say. So fuck you.
Yeah, I totally disagree.
What? He did. Guy Ritchie. What did he do last? What is the last thing he did?
King Arthur?
No. Really?
Yeah, we got another one. We got Aladdin coming very shortly.
Oh, he did that?
Yeah.
Shit. All right, now we'll know. Fine.
No, we know. I'm not saying Aladdin's a bad film. I haven't seen it yet. I'm just saying that on the output of the last 20 years, you know, with the
Sherlock
Holmes
were awesome. I love
Sherlock
the Sherlock Holmes
film. It's fine.
They're second, both awesome.
Second one is extraordinary. Anyway, yes, it made me lament a little bit about the early Guy Ritchie when he took chances with films and his style was so new and his shtick was so fresh.
But he did have the, like, to turn on a dime and actually make, like, these other movies that are not very Guy Ritchie. He's versatile.
Here is the reason why he sucks, by the way.
Why?
Because Madonna succubused him.
Yeah, she succubused him big time.
Yep, massively. Have you seen that picture?
With the fucking dildo?
Yes.
Yeah, everyone's seen that. I don't know if it's real or not. It probably is real.
If it isn't, well played.
So the guy likes to get pegged.
If it is.
What do you want? I mean, he's a director. Okay.
It's a good representation of why he sucks now.
Oh, no, it's not.
No disrespect if you like to be pegged.
It's fine to have stuff shoved up your asshole, Paul. It's fine.
That's on you. All right, that was my six and your six. My number five, then, is another Danny Boyle film. It is arguably the most loved Danny Boyle film and probably the most iconic film on my list. It is Trainspotting.
Not on my list.
Oh!
Yeah. Okay. I do agree. It's good. It's on my honorable mention.
That's brilliant. A brilliant film that at the time, when I watched this in 1996, I'm like, I don't understand any of this shit. I don't do drugs.
Yeah.
What the fuck? What's he crawling to the toilet for?
I didn't either.
And I hadn't really studied much about it. 23 years later, having dealt with lots and lots of addicts, this film is utterly brilliant.
That's Paul's work. He doesn't just hang out with them.
Dealt with, I gave them drugs.
Yes. Oh, yeah, sorry. He's a drugger. He's a fucking I'm a pimp. Yeah, he's the Colombian guy.
Dealer, I think that's what you're looking for. Clearly, I'm joking there. No, dealer. The fact that this film could take such serious subject matter. I mean, some awful stuff happens in this movie.
I imagine you would have had quite the time with when he shat in the bowl and then had to go chasing the suppository. I imagine you, a man who has problems with butt stuff, would have a real problem with this scene.
I went further than what you're saying, like dead baby's way. That's where I was going through too.
Oh, yeah, the dead baby. That's horrible, isn't it?
Not to make any further jokes about that, despite Wayne's desperate attempt to cover up. This film is dark, but it's also incredibly comedic and incredibly engaging. Like these characters, again, this is the, yes, he was in Shallow Grave, Ewan McGregor, but this is the film that catapulted him into stardom. This is the film that he owes his whole career to. Same with Robert Carlyle, arguably Johnny Lee Miller, and even...
Johnny Lee Miller was doing stuff like Hackers, but yeah, I get you. I know what you mean.
Yeah, but it wasn't a big
film. No, it wasn't like this.
Even Ewan Bremmer as well. Like all four of these guys... This, their careers are built on this. It is so iconic. Scottish film. I don't know. Is Danny Boyle Scottish? I don't know. My apologies. I should have looked that up. But it,
yeah, I don't know either.
With a, such an iconic soundtrack as well.
I would say definitely the soundtrack.
Which is hard to not put this on the episode.
Go ahead and throw it around. But so, like, yeah. You know, I think also that you're right. The fact that it made you laugh, especially with a shit joke. it sort of belies how this movie is actually enjoyable, even though it's telling you don't do drugs.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It's a morality tale.
Yeah, and for sure. The worst shit about it,
but literally. It's incredibly put together, and it from a visionary director at arguably the height of his powers. I know that he goes on to win the Academy Award for Slumdog Millionaire. I think he did anyway. Slumdog Millionaire won Best Picture. Can't remember if he won Best Director for that year, but Danny Boyle is one of the best filmmakers working still today.
I'd probably agree.
23 years later.
Pretty the sequel sucked.
Sequel was really, really low rent.
I think most people forgot about
it. Even recycled about 25 minutes of footage from Trainspotting.
And that was kind of the best part.
In a 100-minute film, give or take. It was, yeah, let's not talk about that. Let's not tarnish. There are some people who love the second one because their love for this really? Concept, this novel and the film.
But you indie forward it, didn't you?
But for me, as a casual, so to speak, fan of a film which I really, really like, the second one was just nothing.
Yeah, no. I would agree. I would agree. All right, good call. Fair enough. My number five is freaking Hot Fuzz. That's where I put it. So we're going to have to jump back to you.
There's a duty vote for you. My number four is a film I spoke about last week, so I won't want to crap on about too much in my top 10 intense films. It was extraordinarily high on my list. It is Neil Marshall's The Descent.
Really?
Yeah.
So good. So good.
This film I wouldn't have put on the list if I was jonesing for votes, but this is a me list, and it's authentic and...
Oh, okay, Senator. I know.
Couldn't
I know.
Have said ScoMo.
ScoMo. We'll get it.
Yeah. You still haven't seen this film. You must.
I haven't.
And I want to be there.
Okay, I'm scared.
This could be like a night. This could be like a, we could do like a live party watch of The Descent.
Oh, what?
Yeah. We'd like that? Both of us, we could even film reactions, but we could have you, both of us on social media and commenting as it happens, which not really watching the film, so that's why I'm not.
No, then everyone would know I'm a total bitch. I mean, they know it now, but like they would see it directly.
They would then know.
I'm too scared, and I'm also really claustrophobic. Not really, but kind of.
That's what I'm saying. Watch this film because it would make your list.
I will shit in front of the camera. So,
would you have your pants on or off?
I mean, on.
Okay, that's right then. That's my number four. Again, if you want to hear me talk about it at length, check out last week's show, the top 10 intense films. My number four, The Descent.
Okay. My number four is A Fish Called Wanda. Love this one. Here's an up.
Never seen it since it first opened. Like, I haven't seen it in 30 years.
Oh, God. I adore the hell out of this film. And I looked at it again recently. And
okay.
Holds up, man.
All right.
John Cleese is wicked as always. Jamie Lee Curtis in what I consider to be her prime. Right here. But most of all, Kevin Kline. And he's fucking, like, he's the heart and soul of the film, in my opinion. He plays this sadistic Otto who carries a silenced pistol everywhere. And he's an American. And he's, like, he's against the British. And he successfully accessorizes baseball caps and trench coats. Very good. All right? So,
very important consideration for Wayne's list.
But, yeah, shit, man. Like, there's all these scenes in here where John Cleese is doing a striptease. He gets interrupted by a family and children. Michael Palin gets chipped, rammed up his nose by Kelvin Kline.
That's right.
And Kevin Kline. Kevin Kline. And Kevin Kline is beating up on John Cleese after he finds him robbing his own house. That is just a funny scene because he's yelling at him and throwing shit on his head. I don't know, man. I always adored this movie.
Okay.
Fierce Creatures was not as good, but it wasn't that bad either.
I remember seeing Fierce Creatures at the movies, at the cinema, and just going,
it definitely wasn't the movie this is, but I remember enjoying it.
I understand why they tried to mine the same.
Well, I actually think that this film shaft. This film actually established that British eccentrism can sell. Like, this was a very early one of those movies, and it kind of spawned these kinds of movies, to me anyway. So, yeah.
It was definitely interesting, definitely different. I understand why it's here on the list and might garner you a lot of votes.
Maybe one vote.
A lot of votes. All right, my number four, three. My number three is a film which is on your list. It's a question of whether it's one, two, or three. It is Guy Ritchie's other seminal masterpiece. It's Snatch.
It's number three.
Yeah, there it's you number go. Three. It's weird that of the list we have both the Guy Ritchie films in the same place.
I know. Oh, okay.
This is a better film, to my mind, than Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
I agree.
It is one of the best British films I've ever seen, clearly, at number three. And it's just, it's like Guy Ritchie at his zenith. It's all the things about Guy Ritchie films.
Yes.
Like the awesome sort of loose frames.
Losing
editing,
frames is the shit. It's so cool when he does
that.
The
camera mounted to the actor, the really hard-assed gangsters who scare you, yet the playful kind of tone that underlies it all.
Absolutely.
It's a weird mishmash of styles tonally that comes together perfectly.
You know, I watched this with my sister one time, and at the end of the movie, this is like after it had been out for years or whatever, just at the end of it with the quick cuts of the gets on the plane, drinks the thing, but she goes, that's such a good film. It was just undeniably, fuck, that was a good film, satisfying. So I got some interesting intel about it.
All right, well, before you get there, though, can we just mention the cast, which is also stellar. Yeah, so Statham, Brad Pitt, absolutely. At this point in his career in 2000, playing against type, Brad Pitt was the leading man's leading man. He's obviously a very, very good-looking bloke and just could have done anything he wanted to do. And he chose to play this grimy, grungy pikey who then with an indecipherable accent. So the DVD release, and I haven't got the Blu-ray, but the DVD release has subtitles? Pikey subtitles.
That's so cool.
It's so awesome. Dags. Do you like Dags?
Dags, yeah. No, he apparently has a history of calling directors. After he sees a movie he likes, he calls that director and goes, can I be in your next thing? That's what he did
after Lock, Stock.
Yeah, he did that with this.
Dennis Farina. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace, Vinnie Jones, and of course Benicio del Toro, your favorite. They're all fantastic. This film is so memorable. Such great characters all coming together, and it pulls off there's gross murders, there's horrendous violence, and yet it still retains a sense of fun.
Oh yeah, and I think also it was like Lock, Stock, but more.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like, and it became cooler.
It's the zenith. It's the peak of
the Brad
Ritchie.
Pitt thing really helped it as well.
Oh, absolutely.
He was probably the best role he ever had.
Look, I don't want to get too much into that, but I think it's fine casting, and whether Ritchie had written this around him or went, let's get him to do that, full credit to everybody.
Well, on that point, did you know that Brad Pitt couldn't pull off a London accent, and that's why he decided to make him go pikey?
Oh,
yes.
I did not know that.
And then like there was like all these weird things, like Bricktop was supposed to be Sean Connery.
Alan Ford? Great other choice. Dude, I don't know whether Sean Connery could have done this.
He couldn't have done it. And also, because like apparently Sean Connery said, look, I liked your Lock, Stock film, but you can't afford me. I'm like, fuck off. Brad Pitt's coming in, son. Don't worry about it, right? But yes, Bricktop was the shit, man. Yeah, he was so menacing.
I'm so glad that Sean Connery decided to go and do The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen instead.
You're right. Nothing could have... I can't imagine anyone doing Bricktop with that. You know, I'm an horrible cunt. That guy, he's awesome.
Even like, it's nice that Ritchie... Like a lot of initially indie filmmakers, that he stays loyal. So like even Ewan Bremmer, Jason Fleming gets another role in this film. Ewan Bremmer is in it from Trainspotting. And of course, Lenny James, who goes on to some big stuff in like The Walking Dead.
Yes, true. Good point.
And other TV shows as well.
This is an awesome freaking movie. It was probably maybe the second one I thought of, in this case, I better put it third, of British films.
It was an instant, had to be included for me.
Totally.
My number two is a film that won't be on this. I don't think my one or two is on your list, to be brutally honest, and it's a real, real shame. My number two is my last Danny Boyle film, the third in my list.
What is it?
It's 28 Days Later.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
I can't remember if Nick from Epic Film Guys hates this one or just 28 Weeks Later, but this film to me is how you do an indie film and make it look incredible. One of the first films shot digitally in 2002.
Oh, really?
And they managed to empty out the streets of London, including the street leading up to like Westminster and the like,
over
the
bridge.
Don't ask me how they did it. I just closed it off. It have him, Cillian Murphy, in a very iconic role, waking up from a coma, walking across the bridge, and then the whole world is, well, at least all of London is infected by this virus, which turns people into rage machines. They are not thinking. They are just must attack, kill, destroy.
Now, is it?
It's often incorrectly labeled a zombie film.
So it's not, I was just going to ask you, is it a zombie film?
They are alive and well. You shoot them wherever, they will go down. They don't just get up and reanimate. But
that's,
they are
better.
So extremely violent. It's more realistic.
Yeah.
And this film sort of grounds itself in the realism, and there are some amazingly intense sequences where some violence happens very, very fast. Some people lose the appreciation in the third and final act, where Christopher Eccleston and his group of soldiers are doing what they're doing, without spoiling it, obviously.
Yeah.
But for me, the message of we humans are as monstrous as our base inner instincts, more so, you know, we're as bad.
So it's got something to it.
There's some real deep divey stuff here as well, which is what elevates this film to such a high position on my list. All great performances. Naomi Harris as well, very, very good in this film.
I think I'll eventually get to it.
Brendan Gleeson, you've never seen it. Oh, you got to watch this. This is a seminal horror film.
Yeah.
To my mind.
You already got me fucking watching Pet Sematary tomorrow.
Yes, Pet Sematary. We are seeing an early screening of. I'm very much looking forward to that. And you wouldn't have seen the original nor read the book, so.
I did see the original in the drive-in. In the drive-in.
Oh, Mary Lambert's film?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then you know what to expect. But I have heard they've made. Anyway,
we'll
save that for shortly in the main reviews. My number two, 28 Days Later.
Very nice. My number two has got to be on your list. It's Layer Cake.
Honorable mention.
Oh my god.
Dropped it because I like it a lot. But on rewatch, did not hold up as well.
Fuck off.
For me.
Oh god, this is definitely one of the most slick, stylish films I've ever seen. Okay. So it's about this unnamed mid-level cocaine dealer, Daniel Craig. He's in London and he's making plans to step away from the criminal life, but before he can cut the ties, the dealer's supplier, Jimmy Price, draws him into this complicated pair of jobs involving kidnapping a teenage daughter of a rival gangster and then brokering the purchase of a big bunch of ecstasy pills. But really, my favorite things about this film are the scale and style of the cinematography, because it makes London... I don't know, this movie is like... It feels epic. And it's a British crime gangster thing. To me, it feels epic, right? The scene where the dude pours scalding water on a guy and then there's this sweeping, like whipping shot... And Duran Duran plays in the background. It's fucking beautiful. And I remember thinking to myself, who's trying to play fucking Duran Duran in this movie? Somehow it works.
Okay.
Really wicked.
Yeah, I think it's a great film. I'm not knocking it. It was my last one I cut to my number 11.
Yeah. And Sienna Miller never looked so good.
Greed also. And I think, yeah, for me, the very final bit, and if you haven't seen this film from 15 years ago, sorry, you've already mentioned it. You never get his name. And I didn't realize that watching the film.
Neither did I.
That was
no
the
one
kick
did.
In the balls that made no me say, this film was great.
Oh, yeah. No one did. And I remember you recommended it to me, and I was like, holy shit. So just stylish, man.
Honestly, I watched it once again, six before we did the podcast, and I remember thinking, yeah, it wasn't as good as I remembered it to be, and that's why it dropped. And when I say not as good, it's like dropped from 4 to 3.5 stars.
Type. You're expecting.
Still very, very good. But that's why I didn't have it on my list only. Had I watched it again, maybe it would re-elevate again. I don't know.
Weird thing. Tom Hardy's in this movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's got like a tiny little role at the beginning. Yeah.
Everybody starts somewhere.
That's right.
All right. Well, then let's give recaps then of our list 10 through 2 before revealing our number 1. My number 1 will not be yours. So I'm fascinated to hear, because it's clearly not on either of our lists.
Yeah, I guess not.
Wow. I mean, not that I'm surprised by mine, but you're obviously going to be... that's weird.
Oh,
my number 10 then, Sunshine. 9, Casino Royale from 2006. 8, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. 7, Hot Fuzz. 6, Lock, Stock and 2 Smoking Barrels. 5, Trainspotting. 4, The Descent. 3, Snatch. Number 2, 28 Days Later. And number 1, of course, I've hinted at it, I've alluded to it, there is no better film out of Britain for me, Edgar Wright's debut feature film, Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, of course. In my head, I thought you already said this one.
No, and I mentioned it when I talked about Hot Fuzz, but this is a romantic comedy, fuck you, Wayne, with zombies. It's also a horror film.
Is it a romantic comedy, though?
I'm now going to show you the screen where it says a romantic comedy with zombies on Letterboxd. Can you read that from where you are?
Yeah, but who wrote that?
The Letterboxd people. That is the byline for this film.
Okay, all right.
We've argued about it back and forth. It crosses genres. It is brilliant. It references...
Is it not a comedy with some romance in it?
It's a romantic comedy with zombies and horror. And it crosses all of those genres, to my mind, and does it brilliantly well. To me, first and foremost, it's a horror film. Why? Because it was a zombie film. Because it's referencing so many zombie films that have come before it. It's so brilliant. The cast is stellar. apart from obviously Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, we've got Bill Nighy as well.
Yes, Bill Nighy, I remember now.
Yeah. Lucy Davis, Dylan Moran as the asshole dude.
Yeah, he's good.
Perfect.
Is Lucy Davis his girlfriend?
No, Lucy Davis is Dylan Moran's girlfriend. Kate Ashfield plays Liz, which is his girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know which one you liked a lot.
I like not the lead girl.
Yeah, so you like Lucy Davis, who... Yeah. Was in Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Not looking the same.
I know. Let's not hang on that, but I do know that. Yes.
Yes. So it's a great, it's a fantastic cast. Again, Rafe Spall, Jessica Hines from Space, Martin Freeman in a small role in these films as well. It's so well cast. It's so well acted. It's so, the script is what is so clever about
this. Yeah, totally. No, I agree. I do actually enjoy this film. It's one of the few like this that I, do.
Yeah, it manages to straddle that divide between being cute and endearing and funny and then go dark in places, which you weren't really expecting.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Here's a pro tip for you. Rafe Spall. Mm-hmm. His movie with Simon Baker, I Give It a Year.
Never even heard of it.
It's a romantic comedy. It's fucking great. You should check it out. It's unexpectedly very good. It's got Rose Byrne and shit in it as well. Anyway. Okay,
there you go. All right. Well, that's my number one, the best British film to my mind, Shaun of the Dead.
Well, my 10-1 goes a little like this. 10, Shallow Grave. 9, Four Weddings and a Funeral. 8, Kingsman, The Secret Service. 7, The Killing Fields. 6, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. 5, Hot Fuzz. 4, A Fish Called Wanda. 3, Snatch. 2, Layer Cake. And of course my number one is goddamn Casino Royale. That's the best goddamn movie ever. Like,
what? No.
Okay, I'll tell you some interesting... Because we talked about this a million times even before this show. All right, I'll tell you some fun facts, okay? At the beginning, it was a conscious decision to leave the semi-naked girls out of the opening credits, as this was supposed to be James Bond's origin story.
Early days,
and he had not yet effectively established that kind of I like bitches thing until the end of the night. So that's why that is. In the shower scene, you know where Bond comforts distraught Vesper? And did you think that him putting her fingers in his mouth was weird?
Yes.
Okay. I remember looking at it going, what's he doing? But I also think that it fucking worked. They were in the shower and stuff. She was supposed to be naked in that scene. And he said, Daniel Craig said, she would not have had the presence of mind to take off her clothes and get into the shower. She's just in there. And that's why he
walked in with his fingers. What is the fingers about?
The fingers is...
It's like a sucking reflex of babies or some shit.
It was weird.
She been rocking and he was comforting her, I'd have been okay with that.
No, it was... intimacy. He was not kissing her. He was just...
I'm glad you brought that up. That was my worst.
I actually don't...
Oh, apart from the mansplaining of...
Mansplaining was...
of the rules of...
It was over-explaining. There's no such thing as mansplaining.
No, there's only Wayne-splaining.
Trust me, I don't do that. I don't know anything. So there you are. That's just the fucking... I don't know. How is... This is the best British film.
Nope.
It's the best one.
Nope,
man.
It's number 11.
Oh, God.
We will see. We'll see what the listeners think in due course. There it is. They are our list, the top 10 British films. What do we miss? What do we get right? Let us know on our various social media platforms. I'll just run through them, shall I? At the Countdown Podcast at gmail.com, on Twitter at the Countdown PC, or via Facebook listener community, which the link is in the show notes. You can also, leave us a review if you haven't already.
Yeah, man.
Review for the show. If you're listening, you enjoy what you're hearing. Hit us up with a 5-star review on whatever platform that you are
listening to. Just Google us. Google the Countdown Podcast.
And you can Google us. All the rest of it as well. All right, then. Without any further ado, let's get into it then. Your feedback on the top 10 British films in a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about. Pop 10. Talk about.
Kicking off this week's top 10 with Marquee Mark Ellis Reagans from the So Wizard podcast. He's number 3, Dead Man's Shoes. Very good film.
Really?
I haven't heard of it. Yeah, it's a very low budget film directed by Paddy Considine from Hot Fuzz and the like. Number 2, Shaun of the Dead. Yes.
Word.
And number 1, The 39 Steps, which I believe is
old school.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, I've
old
seen it. I've
school
seen it.
Fan film.
Hmm.
Dina Marie, the aforementioned, after her 100th episode on Twisted Philly. Congratulations again, Dina Marie. Four Weddings and a Funeral, Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
The Bank Job. Is
Jason Statham?
I don't know.
Okay. Could be the original.
David Powell, he was the one who did set us straight on what is British and what is not. So I had to give him a shout out here. And he said, probably too broad a topic. The broadest since Black and White List. Laughed. Number 3, with Nell and I. Less fans of that. Two, Trainspotting, and number one, The Third Man, another old school classic. And then he had about 20 films he listed as his honorable mentions.
The man's a connoisseur.
Dean Jeffrey from the IMDb Journey podcast, who of course beat us at our own game a few weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
Clockwork Orange, first mention of that film, did give it serious consideration for my list. Snatch and Casino Royale.
Boom!
Sally Vaughan, another top-level patron of the show, good friend. The Plank, which is a film I cannot say I've ever seen.
No, neither.
Life of Brian and Monty Python and The Holy Grail.
Ah, fan.
A big fan of, obviously, the Monty Python. Ghost of the Stratosphere podcast. Again, Holy Grail, Monty Python. Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead were their choices. Nerds Chatting podcast. Trainspotting, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. And a film which I love as well, Dog Soldiers. Actually, swap out Dog Soldiers for Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz. Fuck, this is hard.
Yes, it's hard. Difficult.
It is. Welcome to our particular world. Dan R. Hodds, 76. Three, Kes, which is like a film from the 60s.
Oh.
About a kid and his relationship with a bird from vague, owl maybe, from vague memory.
Okay.
Two, Get Carter, and number one, Get Carter from 71.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, Dead Man's Shoes. Another recommendation there.
Okay.
Dave from Super Movie Rose, Shaun of the Dead, Snatch, 28 Days Later. I can watch any of these at any time. They may not be the high watermarks for British cinema, but they are my faves.
Okay.
All on my list.
I guess you're getting his vote.
Well, I would, but he's not on Facebook. God damn it.
Awesome.
Moonstacks, number one, With Nell and I, two, Hot Fuzz, three, Kingsman, one. It counts because the director and most stars are British.
I agree.
Christian Steele, long time listener to the show, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Fuck that movie.
Ooh.
Honestly, I swear it's impossible to follow. I know you're all smarter than me. I'm just telling you, I had big problems with it.
Well, then you'd be happy with his number two and three choice, Casino Royale and Word. Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Boom. Okay, he's on.
Now that I'm older, Shane from that show, long time since we've heard from Shane, Clockwork Orange, Snatch and Shaun of the Dead.
See, there's all the same ones. There's some definite top tens here.
Well, here's a different one. Jedi Dropouts Productions, number one, Shaun of the Dead. Two, The World's End.
Really?
Three, Hot Fuzz.
Now, and come acknowledged, on.
I'm sure this isn't the most popular ordering, but I stand by it.
Resolute, if you will.
Bam.
All right.
Last view. Contrarians, Julio, good friend, patron of the show. Three, first mention of Sense and Sensibility.
Wow.
Early start to my lifelong crush on Kate Winslet. Number two, Snatch, back when Guy Ritchie owned the world. Agreed, Julio.
Sure.
Number one, Life of Brian. Strongly believe that being raised Catholic makes it even funnier.
Oh, I would agree.
That's a good point.
Absolutely.
Then from Justin from the So I Married a Movie Geek podcast, which will be on in a few weeks' time. Lately, you'd think number one was about time for how much is on our TV. Time traveling wardrobe envy, anyone?
Okay.
How is this not on your list, Wayne? I would totally have thought this was going to be. Given how much you suck this film's dick.
I'm going to be real honest with you. I forgot. I actually thought of it and forgot to write it down.
The truth.
In my real whiff, which is now too late to append, I would probably put this at maybe number seven.
Disallowed, please. The jury/listeners.
No.
Disregard.
I forgot. It was definitely going to be on there. I can't believe I left it off. Now it's my first honorable mention.
I did write back to Justin and say Wayne will love that one, and he wrote back, "Well, yeah, it's got Margot Robbie and Rachel McFlaps in it.
She does Rachel McFlaps. It's great. I love that people are using the flaps suffix now, and sometimes prefix."
Flappy.
Oh, yeah. Flappy, if you will.
Ink Spore said Trainspotting is a national treasure. That film Zulu from 1964. And my top one, This Is England from 2006. It may have been set in the 80s, but it still speaks volumes about the working class life here and to me personally.
I see. I
want to see that film. Brits on Bikes. I thought, well, hang on. Who could have a better authority than Brits on Bikes? With Nell and I. Beautiful Very Thing, which I don't know. And The Red Shoes, which is a film from, I think, the late 40s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that is it for this week's Pop 10. Thank you so much to everyone who gets back to us. We're sorry we didn't have time to get through all of the feedback. We really, truly do appreciate your responses
to the
questions each week.
Cool.
All right, Wayne, what's happening next week then? That is 208 down. What are we doing next week for 209?
You know when you watch a movie and then it ends and you don't know what the fuck's what? That's what we're counting down next week.
That's a good way
to put it. The top 10 ambiguous endings. Movies. We'll come up with the actual title, but yeah.
Top 10 ambiguous endings. I think that is perfectly put together. This is a great suggestion from Sally Vaughan.
Yes, Sally Vaughan.
Aforementioned patron, top-level patron of the show. So we're going to go with those films which really left us on edge, like which way did it go, and being able to
speculate
slash debate with your friends. And I'm sure we'll get into some of those debates on next week's episode.
Nice.
That is it for this week's show, the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne. We're going to see you real soon.
And this has been, of course, The Sound.
Fuck
Board.
Off.
Ooh,
this is a shit one. This is such a shit one. I mean, they're all shit, but this is really shit.
How dare you?
Fuck that.
It's like, you just got like a like bad taste in your mouth.
Holy hell, son, your mother's useful as a cock-flavored lollipop.
Can you not isolate the fucking vocal at least? It sounds like a noisy shit fart. Okay.
No, I can't. We will catch you next week.
The night thing. Yeah, but the stupid thing that I find amusing about this scene is when they all go clip-clop, right?
That the fact that they... this is an absurd version of... Oh, hang on, I'm sorry. I'm currently receiving a call from a +33 number, which I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest is Latvia.
Oh, yeah, I get that a lot too. What the fuck is that? Smacked out.